format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks. My sobriety date is April 13th, 2012. The Atlantic Group is my home group. I have a sponsor who's taken me through the 12 steps. And I think those are my stats right there. Judy, thank you for asking me to speak wherever you are. They said that this is going to go fast, so let's just get right into it. When I first started drinking, I mean, I loved everything about it. The way it tasted, the way it made me feel, the way it made me feel out of myself, and most importantly, probably the camaraderie of it. You know, I didn't realize that I just felt so uncomfortable. I felt so uncomfortable in my own skin, and I never felt like I could connect to anybody else. So as soon as I started drinking, like, I forgot all about that, and I actually felt like, you know, I could breathe for the first time. I always felt like I was, like, on the outside looking in. Like, I just didn't understand how people were interacting and relating to each other. Even though I was, like, I had friends, I had family, I had groups, but it just, like, didn't make sense to me. So I found alcohol, and I was like, this is excellent. This is great. You know, and I had a really fun time for a long time, for many years. I had a progression, and I was like, great. You know, I'm from Brooklyn. A lot of my drinking was, you know, in bars around the city, out in the Rockaways, like a lot of bars. Like, we always knew somebody that was bartending, you know, put $20 behind the bar and drink for the night. You know, so that just went on. High school, college, you know, nothing notable to report, really. I mean, looking back, was I drinking every day and trying to get out of myself? Yeah, but nothing too crazy at this point. You know, I was drinking with the people that drank like me, so I didn't think of it. I didn't think anything different. You know, after college was probably when I crossed some kind of invisible line and things went downhill really, really quickly. You know, I was working at this point. I was back from college. I was in the city, or working in the city. And, you know, I was drinking every day at this point, but then my drinking was all day at this point. And I was working in an office with, you know, on an open floor with, like, hundreds of people near me, and I was, like, bringing alcohol to work with me, you know, and I wasn't at a bar. Like, I was in an office area. So, you know, I was getting up at 5:30 in the morning. The first thing I was doing was, you know, chugging vodka, wine, whatever it was. And if you're sitting here thinking, like, oh, well, I'm not an alcoholic because I didn't drink in the morning, like, this did not have any, like, red flags for me. Like, I did not think this was bizarre at all. It just was like, wow, I have an empty stomach. Like, I feel really good right now, like, with this alcohol in me. So, you know, which then continued to progress, right? So, you know, as a girl, I have my pocketbook. And then I just started bringing, like, bottles of wine and, like, vodka wherever I went. And I would start to put them in water bottles because it would be lighter. You know, a smart water bottle can fit an entire bottle of wine in there. So I would just carry that around. You know, so at this point, I'm just being propelled throughout my life. I'm working all day. I'm still working till 7 o'clock at night, you know, and I'm drinking all day. And nobody's saying anything to me at this point. I'm still doing my job, you know. But as you can imagine, you just get pretty depressed when you're drinking like that, you know. I remember that I just started to be alone, really. I was really just starting to be alone at that point when I drank because I wanted to connect with other people for so long. So at this time also, I'm dating this boyfriend who's, you know, starting to see how I'm drinking, you know, because I'd pushed so many friends and everything away, but he sees this, you know, naturally. So, you know, naturally I start to try to hide it more, you know, because that's my answer, not to drink less or anything, you know. I think he's just ridiculous, a little out of line, and, you know, so I really just start to get really sneaky and really, really feel that alone. And what happens is he also, you know, and I just start to take things that aren't mine. He has, I'll just touch on this very quickly. He has a prescription for something that, you know, that I think I'm entitled to, so I just continue to take it. And when he tries to tell me not to take it, I get mad. So, he starts locking it up. You know, he'll, like, gets these safes, and he'll, like, a fireproof safe. Like, if your house burns down, like, that's what he's keeping this in. And I remember one time I threw it down onto the ground, this fireproof safe, and it opened on the first time. And I remember just I was like, this is what pirates, like, finding treasure must feel like. Like, this is so good, you know? By the time I left that relationship, he had, like, a 250-pound, like, safe that needed his thumbprint, you know, to start to hide things for me. But anyways, this controlling boyfriend, you know, starts to tell my family, like, really what's going on, you know, and naturally they're concerned. So after I had gotten pulled over for drinking at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning on my way to work, and I took the breathalyzer, like, normally I would have never taken the breathalyzer. I kid you not, I was like, nothing's gonna show up. Nothing's going to show up. I'm wasted. My birthday was the night before on St. Patrick's Day. Like, I'm wasted. I'm like, they're not going to find anything. So I get locked up. So this is the kind of, you know, thinking that I have. Anyways, you know, my family, he gets behind them. We go into rehab. And this is the first time that I hear about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is the first time I hear what an alcoholic is. I hear what sobriety is. I know nothing about any of this. Like, missed it. And, you know, but this is the first time people were coming into, they were bringing meetings into this rehab, and people were talking about how they felt. And I was like, oh, I relate to all these people, you know, and it felt good. I was, like, finally detached from alcohol for the first time in God knows how long. So I felt good. So I came out, people started bringing me to meetings. A counselor had connected me to women from the city. I'm like, how did that? I get into meetings? Okay, so I'm going to meetings with all these girls. I'm meeting you guys. My first sponsor was an Atlanta Group sponsor, and I still couldn't get sober. You know, as much as I loved it so much, I loved seeing you guys. I loved how much hope I felt. Everybody was smiley, and, like, you know, I felt so bad. So this felt good. I could not get sober. I was, like, doing service, meetings, this, that, the other thing, you know? So finally, about a year into this, continuing to, like, sit over here, say day one, day three, day seven, day one again, you know, I was just sick of it. So I asked Jess over here to be my sponsor, you know, and I was like, maybe just be honest with her, you know, if I think that I'm going to drink after the meeting, maybe tell her. You know, because I had hid my feelings from people for so long because I didn't think, like, if you knew who I really was, you wouldn't like me and you would leave me, right? Like, that's a lot of my underlying feelings that I'm, like, seeing as I get sober. It's really fun. So, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be honest with her, whatever that means. Because I didn't think I was a liar because I'm not, like, a blatant, outright liar, but just being dishonest by not really telling somebody what's going on. And that's really what I was doing, you know. I was so mocus. I heard Amanda, where's Amanda, say that for the first time in this room. And I was like, mocus, mind out of focus. And I was like, oh, that's what I am, you know. And I couldn't think. It's amazing I'm even stringing words together right now. But I felt like that for a long time, so, which was, you know, a gift. My sponsor just told me to do service. I did service. Like, I didn't even think to say no. I was like, oh, okay, do service, okay, do fellowship, call newcomers, pray first thing in the morning, okay. You know, I really didn't know that I could say no or argue. It was just, that's what it was. Like, and thank God for that, you know, because I really got to start to build a foundation, especially in this room. And, you know, after my sponsor took me through the steps, you know, I started taking other women through the steps, you know, and that's just been, like, such a great experience. And, you know, I've done so many things sober that I didn't know you could do sober. Cause, I mean, I couldn't do anything sober, basically, you know, and I've had all these, like, great life experiences, have made great friends in this room, some that came to see me. They're waving right now. Thank you. And, you know, it's just, it's really been such a treat. I mean, with that said, you know, sobriety does not promise that I'm going to have this easy life and this life's going to be, you know, so good all the time. Like, of course, in almost 4 years sober, I've had death, loss, difficulties, relationships, this, that, the other thing, you know? And all the sobriety helps me with is to, like, walk through those things like a human. And even if I'm scared and you guys, like, all walk shoulder to shoulder, like, with me as I'm going through that. And, like, that's really the gift here, you know? It's like if I'm sober, I actually have a choice. And I actually have a choice of how I respond to people, and I have a choice to be happy. And for that, I am grateful. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Devin.
Good. Hi, everybody. My name is Devin. I am an alcoholic. You know, I love this group. Someone explained it as kind of like Town Hall of AA in New York, and I really believe that to be true. And, you know, it's like, what do you say? I have 10 minutes, so that's not a lot of time. I thought maybe I could share the stories of waking up in jail. I thought maybe I could share the story of the home invasion where my teeth were shattered with brass knuckles and I had staples in my head and I woke up with my arm had been cut with a knife because I thought I was a tough guy and I was living a life of a criminal, which I'm not tough. I was just afraid. And I thought maybe I could talk about that time I went to treatment and I checked all the boxes for other people, but I didn't mean it. But, you know, those are the outside consequences of my life when I'm drinking. Those aren't what make me an alcoholic. And I've already told you the most important thing I could ever tell you, which is that I am an alcoholic. And I didn't know that when I came in. I learned what alcoholism was through the fellowship and through the book and through the elders that have been around before me and all the teachers that got put in my life. And, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about how I felt. And I feel like I never hear anybody come and speak that doesn't identify that they always felt from as long as they can remember that there was something missing. And that's my story. I don't come from a broken home. I just never really was confident and comfortable being me. And the first time I drank to feel it. I never thought it was I never realized that you drank any other way. And I can remember it was, you know, stealing liquor from my friend's parents' basement bar. And I can remember it just as clear as I can remember all my firsts, all my first solutions to that problem. Because up until that point, I didn't know I was missing a part of me. I didn't know that. And then I found it. I found a solution that all of a sudden I could maybe socialize with you and I could connect with you on a different level. And I stopped having all this worry and anxiety for some reason. And so I followed that. And over that time, the solution that I thought worked did work. And then it stopped working. And then where it got was some of those consequences I talked about. You know, to fund a lifestyle where I could have anything that I needed at an arm's length at any time, I became, you know, the drug dealer at a liberal arts college. And I thought, oh, now I have a drawer full of money. And I don't have a craving because whenever I want anything, I go to my drawer of money. And, you know, and so there's consequences of leaving that life. And every time that I had a outside world consequence, you know, the home invasions, the jail, that kind of stuff, I just went back and said, you know, let me scratch my head and I can do this better. And somehow, through the way I lived my life, I'm still here today. And I don't know why that is. I've lost a lot of people along the path that I used to, you know, quote unquote, party with, and they didn't make it. So I want to thank the Atlantic Group for allowing me to be here to do service. I get to be here tonight. I don't have to be here. You know, I get to do service at meetings. I get to show up. I don't have to do any of this, you know, and I think that's a privilege that I don't take lightly because I didn't look like this when I walked in the door. I've been showing people the photo. You know, I had this crazy afro, and I actually used to carry around a bottle of super glue because part of that home invasion and my shattered teeth in a blackout, I cracked my head straight into a table, and so I broke the crown, and I used to have a tube of super glue so I could put it back together when it would fall out as I was eating. And then I went to go get a new one, and the insurance wouldn't work, or, you know, it was within the 5-year window where they don't do cosmetic fixes. So I had a plastic one, and I was chain smoking, so I had almost an orange yellow front tooth that was just plastic. So I get to put on a suit today, and I get to come here, and I get to try to let the people that are still hurting know that there's a way out. And I'm not any, I get to stand up here. I'm not anybody special. I'm just a drunk, you know, but I'm not a specialist too. So if anyone else is like, hey, I didn't just drink, I'm hurting you, you come talk to me. But this fellowship is about alcoholism and that spiritual dis-ease that I felt that I didn't know I had, you know, led me to this tunnel vision, obsessive thought pattern where all I could do was plan and live my life according to when I was going to get more and how I was going to get more. And it took me to a lot of dark places. And at the end, there wasn't a catastrophic life event that changed everything. The unmanageability for me was the internal condition that I found myself in. I was useless. I couldn't really hold a job. I was miserable. I had that kind of thought of like, I deserve so much, but I'm also the biggest loser in the world. And I really, you know, I just want everyone to let me go. And I knew how I was going to kill myself, but I was too much of a coward to ever do it. And waking up to that chatter every day long enough, I became willing to take some new actions into my life. So I did a 28-day thing when I was 18. You know, I checked all the boxes for the family. The moment I got back to my life as I thought it was going to be, it was 6 years before the idea struck me to come back to AA. But in that period, I had met a guy. And the only thing that my friend Will ever told me was, I go to AA and it works for me. He never said, you should come with me. He just said, hey, this is what I do and it works for me. And he was really like too happy. He was too happy. He would walk into a room and the walls would kind of go in and out and everyone liked him. And I was like, yeah, all right, whatever. But I used to call him when I was really hurting. I don't know why. But he planted that idea with me. And it took me a couple of months when I came back. Something wasn't there yet. My nickname was 3-Day Devin over in Williamsburg. I would come in every couple of days. I couldn't make it on day one or day two, but day three I could make it and raise my hand and say I had 3 days. And in those time, in that couple of month window, it always started with just one drink. I can never have one drink. I've lost that privilege, if you will. I just don't have control anymore. And one drink never worked. And I never really slept at the end. I just passed out or blacked out and came to on the floor, you know, on the couch. You know, TV was on, lights were on. It looked like things had been happening. I didn't remember the last bunch of time. Today I look back, and you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. What we offer is a spiritual plan of action. And when I say God, it's like the shortened version of that feeling of the chills down my spine. And I felt it August 28th, 2011, after I took a burning desire and told a room full of people, I know what's going to happen if I leave this room and I don't have a place like this to go. I will be drunk before the end of the day. That is just what is going to happen. And in that moment, I believe that I was honest with myself for the only time in my life up to that point. And everything kind of changed, but I didn't know it was changing. It took perspective, and it took me being able to look back to realize that the obsession to drink and to live how I'd been living was taken from me in that moment. But I don't have any, you know, that wasn't me. I was like watching myself say those words. It was kind of an outer body experience. And I ended up at 4 meetings that day, and I ended up at 4 meetings the next day, and I detoxed like the physical side effects of my lifestyle in the rooms of AA. I didn't think I could go, I didn't realize I could go to hospitals and do, I didn't know that. I went to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and we did a slow round of steps the first time, and he was kind of like letting me hit him up whenever, and I'm here, you know. But somewhere along the line, I realized that I wanted to give something back, and I didn't think I could. So I started seeking someone else that could maybe take me into the big book a little bit differently, and I found someone who just blew my mind about this time a year ago. And you know, he armed me with facts about myself that I didn't know. I didn't know that I judge everybody and that I want something from everybody. I didn't know that I was really just angry and full of hate and inconsiderate and critical. And I didn't know I was full of fear. And getting to see that on paper allowed me to take that to this thing I call God and say, I need help. And so if that word, you know, is tough for you to swallow, it's a loving power that works in my life. And I found it for free and for fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, today I do a lot of service. I sponsor a lot of guys. I can't really say enough about this program that saved my life. And to me, this is the bonus round, you know, and I don't take it for granted. And I feel so grateful to be a part of what I think is the greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century. And with that, my name is Devin. I go to AA. It works for me.